It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 Closet Busters. It is that time once again. We're going to stop the closet dwelling. We are going to step out. We're going to step up and we're going to step into living our powerful truth once again today on the Coming Out Lounge. Now, sometimes, well, actually most of the time, the way to show up in the world is in the moment. And that's exactly how my guest and I met today. No, we weren't on some hookup app anywhere or cruising each other in a club. We were both putting our, well, putting our professional stuff out on the proverbial hookup site, you know, Facebook. And someone shared his article on how to meet a man IRL and not on Grindr. And for those of you who don't know what IRL means, it means in real life. And lo and behold, as soon as I saw this article, I thought, wow, this is a really cool article. It might be something that would be really good for the Coming Out Lounge. And I reached out to this handsome guy and said, hey, buddy, let's hook up on my podcast and talk about all things masculine, vulnerable, and sexual. And guess what? Here we are. So Zachary Zane, he's kind of the, I don't know, you could call him like the modern day Carrie Bradshaw, you know, Carrie from Sex and the City fame. And he's putting his sexuality, his writing, and he's putting everything out there, making his own mark in the city of Boston these days as a writer, and given his interesting perspectives on all things any modern-day male version, well, of Carrie Bradshaw might be thinking. So grab yourself a Cosmo, and let's go hang out on the Coming Out Lounge with my guest, Zachary Zane. Welcome to the podcast, Zachary.
Thank you so much for having me, Rick. It's fun to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. And we're going to be upfront with all listeners right now. We are having one of those moments on the Coming Out Lounge podcast where the technology fairies are not being very nice. So we're doing our best. We want to make this a really good show today, but bear with us if the sound quality isn't quite what it is. We're trying to figure out what's going on, but we're just going to go with it because we're going to be in the moment today. So here we are. I saw this article that you wrote that I really loved about how to meet men IRL. Not on Grindr. And I thought, okay, I want this guy on the podcast. So let's dive right in, man. So you're a writer. You write lots of different things. In fact, I think I saw in your bio, you've done stuff for Cosmo, Bustle, Pride, Huffington Post, Queer Voices. You do a lot of writing.
Yeah, I definitely do a lot of writing, and they mainly focus on what you mentioned, which is sexuality, gender, dating, relationships, and kind of how things are changing with technology and in the modern era, and with the fact that in many places, LGBT culture is becoming more accepted, and kind of what does that mean for us now?
So, like most of us who write, you know, we both write, there's always something personal that kind of draws us into this. So what's really been the impetus personally for you to write about this subject? What's really driving this for you?
So I know I identify as bisexual, and for me, kind of my journey to discovering my bisexuality wasn't super easy. I'd always liked women. I always had crushes on women, but I also found myself attracted to men, and there weren't just any bisexual role models or just any visibility in the media almost whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so I actually remember talking to my psychiatrist about this when I was 16. I remember asking him, you know, I think I might be gay. And he goes, oh, do you like women? I say, yes, no, I know I like women. He goes, then you're not gay. I'm like, well, am I potentially bi? And he goes, nah, bisexuality really doesn't exist in men. And that was the end of that conversation.
Oh, how interesting that is, right? It's like, yeah, let's just draw that definitive line in the sand. Oh, it doesn't exist in men. Okay, well, shoot him. But anyway.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then 2 years later, I went to school in Vassar College in upstate New York, and kind of within 2 weeks, I hooked up with a guy. It was almost so immediate because I really wanted to do it. Of course, I had to get so drunk in order to do it. I was so nervous, you know, barely remembered it because I had to get to this point of inebriation. And then the next day, I didn't have this epiphany that I was expecting. I expected to have the sense of, now I've been missing this my whole life. I'm definitely bisexual. I'm definitely gay. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that. And that kind of confused me. and I wasn't adverse to it, but I didn't necessarily love it. And I was like, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to drop this for now. And then, you know, another 5 years of getting very drunk and hooking up with men. And I was actually talking to my brother and sister-in-law about this, and kind of the response was, you know, everyone experiments, that's fine. You experiment once or twice. You know, after 5 years of experimenting, you're no longer experimenting.
Right, right.
This isn't just you got drunk and tried it once or twice. You've been doing this consistently with many men for half a decade.
And that's the reason that he is the modern day Carrie Bradshaw of male version, because you had to keep getting drunk. You had to keep getting experiences with men. I love this. But, you know, there's something you said, because I'm curious, because I know a lot of my listeners, and I'm going to go with the male listeners because I'm male, so I can only go there. But I do know this about my female counterparts who are lesbians. So you said that first experience, you had to get really drunk because you were really nervous. So I know this sounds mm-hmm. like a really obvious question, but what were you nervous about? I'm curious, because I want to see if there's something different than those of us who identify as gay, if the nervousness is a little bit different. What was the thing that you were most nervous about?
I don't know. I think it was a fear somewhat, where if I hooked up with a man, I think there was definitely a fear of being gay or bisexual. Mm-hmm. I think that was part of it. But I think there was this fear that if I did hook up with a guy mm-hmm. and I didn't necessarily like it, and I was like, no, I experimented, I'm straight, that no one would believe me. It's amazing how 20 plus years of being straight is eradicated with one drunken kiss to a man. No, he's closeted. No, he's gay. So I think I had this fear that I just couldn't necessarily explore without having a label attached to me.
You brought up something very poignant here, in that I think many people, this is a common fear. And it's interesting because you brought it up in a slightly different way than I think most people who end up, quote unquote, coming out as gay. The fear is, hey, what if I do this and I do like this? Then what? Or what if I do this and I don't like this? As you said, then nobody's going to believe you. And the funny thing is I've done this with client sessions. So yeah, I did this thing and I don't know that I really enjoyed it. Okay. And what's wrong with that? Well, now if I tell people that, they're not going to believe that I'm straight. I'm like, so who says you have to tell anybody that this is what you did? It's an interesting space we step into, that we come to terms with. We're either going route A, and there's all this stuff to go deal with, or we're going to go route B, and there's all this stuff to deal with. But what I love to bring clients back to is, either route you go, there's stuff you're going to deal with. So let's get to the stuff we're going to deal with, and let's get comfortable with it. And it sounds like that's kind of where you went for the next 5 years, was getting to the stuff so you could become comfortable with it.
Absolutely. And I think it took me a while to get comfortable with it. And I always have these elaborate justifications that I'm just, you know, I'm a very open, liberal person. I'm not just constrained by, you know, sexuality, and I can get drunk and do this and still be straight. Or, you know, I'm just horny and I'm mm-hmm. 20 and I'm experimenting. And, you know, it's amazing how you can come up with all these rationalizations as to why you're doing something. And then it was actually once I graduated from college, I was able to kind of explore it more safely, because I wasn't afraid of any label. I could go out on a date, I could do something,
sure.
and I wouldn't have to tell anyone. I think going to a small school, I knew everyone was going to find out. Vassar mm-hmm. has a very large LGBTQ population, and they're very eager to take on new people, say it like that. So, like, if I had done one of these things, news would have, you know, broken. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I always justified it, I think, by being very drunk. So it's like, oh, he's drunk, it's fine. But kind of after I graduated from Vassar and I moved to Boston, I was in therapy, and my therapist just like, just try it. Like, you have nothing to lose at this point. You don't have to tell anyone you did it. And so I did it, and I kept kind of doing it. And then I just kind of started testing the label bisexual. Even before I identified, I just would start telling people I was, just kind of to gauge their responses and see what people thought and see if people believed me. And the responses were varied, but
sure.
after that, I was kind of fully able to embrace the fact that I am bisexual, my bisexual identity.
So in your bisexual, so I'm going to kind of go back to something you said about when your therapist, psychologist was urging you to just go do this. This
mm-hmm.
rationale, okay, just go do this, go experiment, all this stuff. It sounds like most of us who go do anything that it came down to, but what will other people think? What will other people think of me if I do this? Is that where you were kind of operating from?
I think that's always kind of a struggle with bisexuality or being gay in terms of having, what are people going to think? And I think I was so afraid of the label. And the few men in college who did identify as bisexual shortly after identified as gay.
Well, a lot of people often say it's kind of the pit stop before you either say I'm gay or lesbian, which I always kind of take a little bit of, I'll say it because it's my show, so I can say whatever the hell I want to on here. I take a little offense to that because it's like, okay, yes, maybe that is the playing ground to figure things out. I guess because I didn't ever get there. I didn't go to that middle ground space. I kind of knew I was gay, but I was in denial. Mm-hmm. Except I did enjoy the sexual pieces of my life with my wife. But I think it was a different generational thing too of you're either this or this. And then I started to step through things. I'm like, no. I really like men. I really like dick. And that's who I am. But what I often found is a lot of people have this really difficult time with saying, I really like men and I really like women. And screw you if you don't understand it. Because it's something that a lot of people can't wrap their head around. It's very difficult. And I guess would be that's part of what was going on for you.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think kind of the fact that these were the only people I had seen represented were the people who used it as a stepping stone. So I think I myself wasn't even completely sure it actually existed.
But you also brought something up, Zachary, that I think is really important here, that even in this day and age, and you know, I'm going to generalize here. Okay, we have our gay and lesbian and transgender role models that we see a lot. I personally still in media in general, whether it's news or in TV representation or any of this, I do not see the bisexual community represented.
I think not nearly as much as well, which is I think why I've been able to get almost as many things published as I have and been able to write for various outlets because this voice is so underrepresented.
Absolutely.
And despite the fact that they're actually more people in the LGBT community that identify as bisexual than gay or lesbian. Mm-hmm. I think there's just a lot of bi erasure that goes on. I think we really are stuck in this binary of gay straight. And if you see a man walk down the street with another man, you assume he's gay. If he's walking down the street with another woman, you assume he's straight. And the only people you see who are bisexual are the people who are very almost like loud and open and in these kind of elaborate polyamorous relationships, because then you can see, oh, they're bisexual, but otherwise you just don't think people are.
Well, now we keep dipping our toes in the water in different ways. I mean, I remember when the term bromance first started showing up in pop culture references. And then, you know, now there's an app called, I think it's actually called Bro or something like that, where it's for, you know, guys who really want to kind of hook up with other guys for deeper friendships. Maybe they do diddle around, but we keep just kind of dipping our toes in this, like, nobody seems to know what to do with this, which always irritates me. It's like, we don't have to know what to do with this. This is what this person is. Let them be who they are. And this is what we are. We're gay, so be who we are. And then there's our lesbians. And okay, I'm going to say transgenders. To me, that's a whole different ballgame. That's all gender identity sort of stuff. But let them be who they are, too. I feel for my brothers and sisters, including my own child, who identifies as bisexual. And this last week, I was so proud of her because she did this beautiful poem about being bisexual. And she did it in a slam poetry contest. And she made it to the finals. And I thought, you know, this is a pretty big statement to be in high school, putting this out there the way you are. And yes, we're lucky we live in California, which I hate even saying crap like that because, like, you know what? There's hate, there's discrimination wherever you are. But okay, so we're kind of lucky we live in a liberal place. But I hate it that this bisexual conversation isn't really being had. It's there. It's in the subdomain, so to speak, of life. But you guys aren't being given a fair shake, in my perspective.
100% agree. And I think there has been a push now more recently to hear this bisexual voice. I think kind of as there's more of a push with transgender, I think that also kind of includes bisexual in a sense. And I think we're breaking away kind of from this white, gay, male narrative. And I think we are slowly, you know, incorporating aspects of intersectionality and how identities relate to one another. But it's new. It's something that, honestly, the millennials, I hate using that term, but I'm a millennial, like one thing that we care about. And so we are kind of making that push. But still, I mean, still bisexuals are so underrepresented everywhere. And then when we are represented, it's really in this very stereotypical fashion of being greedy, indecisive,
right,
and things like that.
So let me ask you this. If you could, through the beautiful writing you do and the stuff that you're doing and any activism or anything that you may be involved with, if you could have the bisexual voice make a difference, what would be the outcome you would like to see? And we know where we're going with the gay equality movement. We know where the lesbian movement is going. We know where the transgender movement is gone. And I know underneath the subtext of all this is bisexuality having a voice and being treated equal as well. But it's kind of interesting because, do you want to see bisexual marriage laws? Do you want to see polyamory? And we haven't even touched on that yet, but I know that's part of the story too. But it is an interesting question I've never thought of until you and I got on here. It's like, okay, so what would be the outcome for bisexuality? What's the big push?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd say off the top of my head, I can think of just kind of three things. The first one, very simply believing that we exist.
Mm-hmm.
Still, there are a lot of people who just genuinely don't believe that bisexuals exist. They're using it as a stepping stone. And just have that kind of your identity immediately ripped from you is very disheartening and really can lead to various detrimental like health outcomes. After, you know, we are accepted and believe that we exist is to kind of dispel the stereotypes. Mm-hmm. Would be, as I kind of mentioned, the fact that, you know, we're all greedy, we're all polyamorous, we all live for threesomes, we're indecisive, we're using it as a stepping stone. I think the third one, which is a little bit more complex, is for us to be more included in the LGBT movement.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of representing, I think, to be more accepted, specifically gay and lesbians.
One, why is that important to you?
It's important to me because right now it's like the LGBT space should be a space for me. It should be a safe space for me. And when I go out, I can tell you, I was actually at Pride last year with my girlfriend at the time, and we went out and, you know, I would introduce her as my girlfriend. Of course, everyone would have questions about, oh, I thought you were gay, blah, blah, blah. And if they know I'm bi, you know, men got drunker, they got louder, and I heard their whispers, and they'd say things like, oh my God, she doesn't even know that her boyfriend's gay. That's so pathetic. That's so sad. And we overheard all these things and ended up with her leaving Pride crying because she felt like this is a space where she was supposed to be accepted. She was not. I was like, let me go home with you. It's fine. She's like, no. Like, I'll feel even worse if you go home with me. I want you to have fun here. The moment she left, I was able to have fun and then immediately became part of the group. But it was just, these spaces that are supposedly for us truly are not. And I think we just need to have a sense of community.
So what shifted? You say that she left and then suddenly you were able to have fun. So what was the shift? Was it like then you were part of the boys club then, or what was going on?
Well, I think just people automatically assumed because I was with a woman that I couldn't like partake in queer culture. People started talking to me. That's when I know assumed I was gay because in that Pride, I'm wearing tight pink shorts and I'm walking around shirtless and all this stuff.
Right.
But
it's, I find what you just described so interesting. And it is a shame because suddenly you take the girl away and okay, now he fits. He fits our mold.
Exactly.
He fits our, you know, lens of what, oh, he's a gay boy, but yet he's not. And it's so frustrating to see these things, you know, and I speak from my own experience, not me being bi, but with my own experience with my daughter of how at times I have been like, wait, okay, dad's got to wrap his head around this. Even though dad's gay, I got to figure this out myself, you know, and when she went from dating a girl to dating a guy, I was like, okay, well, here we are. We're a little bit closer to what I can really wrap my head around. But, you know, going from girl to girl guy, I was like, okay, man, I got to really figure this out. And I saw my own, you know, they often say homophobia. And I'm like, no, that's not it. It's what I would call sex phobia. It's like that sexual orientation phobia. You can't wrap your head around it. And it's just as damaging
as somebody. It's biphobia.
Yeah. It is really. There you go. It's biphobia. The reason I call it sex phobia is because I see this happen with the transgender community all the time. It's like, whoa, so you want to be a woman, so, oh, then you like men. No, that is not necessarily the truth. Just because this person identifies as a woman, even if they're a male figure standing in front of a mirror and they look and what they see in their mind's eye is the female, no one has the right to assume that, oh, okay, then you like men. It drives me nuts because then we have this whole thing that starts to show up. And what I've seen so beautifully represented as I've been on many panels and stages with my transgender brothers and sisters is the beauty of watching, and one in particular comes to mind, watching her stand up there and talk about her story. And she gets to the point in the story where she says, so, of course, I know what's happening in all of your minds right now is the question. So you must really like men. And the truth is, no, I really like men and women, and I'm a bisexual transgender. And I love it every time she delivers that line, because it's like, I know the whole audience, their minds just got completely fucked up because they don't know what to do. So I feel where you're coming from. And I'm so glad we're having this conversation, because this podcast is airing right during Pride months across the U.S. You know, depending on where you are, it could be weekend coming up that you're going to hear this, and then you'll be at a Pride festival. And I would invite everyone to really look within themselves and say, what does this label really mean? And I'm not just talking about bi. I'm talking about bi, gay, queer, lesbian. What does this really have to mean within our own community? If we just get each other, if we could just all get each other in our LGBTQ world, how much better would we be at helping the rest of the world get who we really are? To me, that's like a huge thing to put out there for people to consider. So how many years would you say now you've identified as a bisexual man?
I guess because I tested the waters with it, it's very difficult to kind of, like, I started using the label, then I would identify as gay for a little bit, then straight. Like, consistently identifying and knowing, probably only, like, 2 years.
Okay. Awesome. And how has that enhanced your life?
It's so much not hiding who you are, not just the confusion that was so all-consuming of every night just wondering about whether I was gay or straight or what's going on or hiding this aspect of me. I face biphobia in terms of, I know I'll go on these great dates with people. The moment they find out I'm bi, they immediately bail. Or, you know, just kind of various other aspects of kind of subtle biphobia that I experience on a daily basis. I'm just happier. I can live my life. I'm content. I've now found a community of a lot of bisexual, a lot of genderqueer, a lot of polyamorous people in Boston. I feel like I have a community. I have a culture that's my own. And they're very difficult in that attraction is so multifaceted and so complex and it's so messy. But, you know, we need to label things so cognitively we can think, oh, this person is gay, this person is straight. It makes it easier for us.
Well, it is a discernment. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look through that lens. In fact, one of the stories I usually use when I'm talking about how we perceive things is all of us, from the moment we're born, we don't really know what anything is until somebody tells us what it is. So as a child, we could be at a park and the first time we see a tree, it's just a thing, something. We don't know what it is until somebody says in that beautiful parental voice, tree, say tree. At that moment, then that's what that thing becomes. So we need our labels to help us discern things. But as we've seen just through what you've shared today and what we talk about a lot here on the Coming Out Lounge podcast is the labels are oftentimes the awful stuff that lead us into the places that divide us most. And I think just what you shared today, you can see how the division of bisexual versus gay versus lesbian, you know, really causes that. And even as you were sharing just a moment ago, you know, when I ask what has this done for you in your life, the confusion and the ease and everything, I'm so glad you use those words, because to me, there's the bridge. Your experience of coming to your truth and letting the confusion go and being comfortable in yourself is the same experience that anyone who's coming out as gay or lesbian or transgender, it's all the same experience, folks. And this is why I love bringing different people into these conversations, simply, if for no other reason, to show how similar we are versus how different we think we are. Okay, so most people are going to make the assumption, which I hate, that, okay, bisexuals, you know, I love how you keep saying greedy. I want to explore that a little bit too, but most people would make the assumption that, oh, if they're bisexual, then they just like sex with men and women. Mm-hmm. I would argue that that's one component of it, but that's not what it's all about, correct?
Correct. It's just not about sex. You know, it's about the capacity to like people for just being people. It's kind of, I don't want to say regardless of gender, because I definitely do like some people because they are feminine or because they're masculine, but we just do like both. You know, we like everything. It's almost like sex is actually, ironically, one of the least important factors of being bisexual. It's about just a connection with people.
But that's the thing that I always argue with everyone, is sex is one of the least important factors, whether you're gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. This is the thing everybody gets hung up on. Oh, so they like, you know, having sex with a man and screwing him up the ass, or, you know, all this crap. It's like, no, there's this thing that's called attraction. There's this thing that's called where you feel most comfortable. There's this thing where you call deeper connections. And this is the pieces that, you know, people miss. You know, it's no different than, okay, so what kind of person are you attracted to? Let's say you're, you know, heteronormative. Let's talk about what kind of person you're attracted to. The minute, well, I really like somebody who's, you know, kind of tall. Oh, so you're a tallie. Okay, got it. They would like die. What do you mean I'm a tallie? Well, you like tall people, so you're a tallie. Oh, uh-huh. And they've got to be, you know, from the Midwest. Oh, so you're a Midwesterner. Okay. So we start laying these labels on, and I'm quite sure if we did this, in fact, I've often would love to have, you know, gotten a Saturday Night Live cast to do something like this. Go, okay, let's do labels. Let's really go down the whole LGBTQ label thing and see what they could do with this. I just find it really interesting. So back to the bisexual, it's not just about sex. This is where I think some people get kind of confused in their head. Then where does the polyamory and the bisexual intersect, and where are they different and how are they alike? I'm curious from your perspective.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that, first of all, anyone, regardless of sexual orientation, can be polyamorous. You know, there are straight people who are polyamorous. There are gay men, gay women who are polyamorous. And there are bisexual people who are polyamorous. So I don't think that is like a definitional characteristic of bisexuality, although there are, you know, numerous people who are polyamorous, bisexuals who are polyamorous, myself included.
Okay, so let's make this clear then. So let's get this really clear, because I want to hear it from your own perspective. We've only done, like, I think we've done two other podcasts in the time the Coming Out Lounge has been around polyamory. So I'd love to hear your definition of what polyamory is from your perspective.
From my perspective, it's just being open to the fact that you could love various people in various capacities at the same time. So it doesn't mean that to be polyamorous, you have to be dating two people. It's just knowing that while you are dating one person, if someone else did come along, you would feel comfortable exploring that relationship. Of course, the key is communication. It's one of those things where you can't leave your partner outside of the loop. It's not just like, oh, something better is coming along, I'm going to do this. You have to let everyone know, you know, who you're dating in your group, that you are polyamorous, and, you know, treating everyone with respect. Because I think a lot of times people get confused between, you know, men who are polyamorous and then men who are assholes. You know, like they might use the label polyamorous, but like, no, they're treating these women with disrespect. They're just dating multiple people and using all of them and playing with their emotions and being manipulative. That has nothing to do with being polyamorous, but sometimes people hide behind that label. No, that person's just an asshole. That guy's not polyamorous.
But I love the way you describe this, Zachary, because you put it in a really good perspective, that there's loving on many different kinds of levels. And I think that's been one of the most concise ways I've had anybody describe this so far, because I know myself, having been in a heteronormative marriage and now in a homosexual marriage and relationship, both of them very long. I've been in one. I was in my marriage for 13 years to my wife, and I've been in my relationship with my husband for 15 years, almost 2 years married now. I can say that there's a lot of different kinds of love, and there's a lot of different kinds of ways you be in relationships. And I think this is part of the dialogue that needs to happen is, I think, and if those out there that don't like these kind of conversations, but I'll go ahead and say it, those right wingers that go, oh my God, it's the end of the world. I think everybody's kind of polyamorous in their own way. They just don't realize it, because you have lots of people in your life you really love, but you don't want to quite say it the way we're starting to say it and talk about it now.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing. One of the reasons that kind of drew me to polyamory was I was in this monogamous relationship for a year, and I was very happy sexually. That wasn't the issue. But the issue was there'd be these people who I'd meet and I could see myself liking them. In some capacity, either as a friend or you just get that immediate crush or even as something more. Yep. And I would purposefully not engage with these people or just meet up with these people because I'm like, you know what? I don't want to have to deal with it. So I was forgoing different connections that could have been, you know, completely platonic just because I almost didn't want to be emotionally cheating on my girlfriend at the time, or worse of it, accidentally physically cheated, even though I don't cheat on people. But I was just nervous about having, you know, an emotional cheating aspect of it. So I kind of stayed away. I didn't do that. And that was very isolating for me.
And I think so many people don't realize that's exactly what happens, is you emotionally isolate yourself when you're not able to say, here's what's going on. This is the biggest thing that needs to be done, is more open and truthful communication. And it's tough to say those words because I know I've been through it. I've been through it in both of my relationships, and actually probably all of my relationships, but definitely both of my relationships, where I realized coming to a truthful space of saying, okay, here's what's really happening. This is what's going on. This is why these things are happening. And I would say not so much with my wife, because when that truthful conversation happened, then we were like, okay, we're done because I'm gay and it's never going to work. When it happened with my husband, it became something completely new and different in our relationship that actually in many ways has held us together in so many different ways.
I was going to say just one thing on the note of polyamory is I don't necessarily believe, you know, we all are polyamorous. Look at animals, look at that stuff.
Right.
And I'm not opposed to monogamy in any sense of the word. I feel like there are some people who are polyamorous and very much believe everyone should be polyamorous. And I'm not one of those people. Kind of to use the terms of Robin Oakes, who's one of my favorite bisexual activists and actually a colleague of mine, but she calls it radical monogamy versus reflexive monogamy. And the idea of radical monogamy is, in essence, you're taking out the should, is the way that she has described it to me, where I'm being monogamous not because I should be, and this is what society has told me, but because given my personality and given the way I connect with people, I'm better equipped. I would be happier. It makes more sense for me personally to be monogamous. And for me, I think a lot of people, this is kind of reflexive monogamy, excuse me, it's just kind of you're doing it because you haven't really thought about it and this is what you've been told to do and that's what you should do. And I think the idea is, you know, for everyone it's different. Everyone should, you know, be introspective and kind of see which type of relationship would work out for them.
Right.
And then go from there. That could be monogamy, that could be monogamish, as kind of Dan Savage says. It could be polyamorous, it could be, you know, anything else, but it's kind of breaking past this societal heteronormative structure that's kind of very oppressive on our mindset of relationships. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a really good place to kind of come full circle here, because it is about finding the way for you to be in your own space on the planet, being just who you are. Each of us has our own way of doing it. There are, as you said, Dan Savage has his monogamous. We have our open relationships. We have our polyamorous. You know, there's lots of different ways to be. And as, you know, people are coming through the doorways and we all have our closets that we're coming out of. I don't care what it is about. Particularly, we talk around sexual orientation and things such as that on this podcast. But it's to realize, okay, I'm going to do this now. How do I want to do this best in alignment for me and who I am as a person? And I think oftentimes there's where the misstep happens. We start to come out and be who we want to be, but then we do it the way everybody else even wants us to be, even the gay and lesbian community that then disses the bisexuals in our LGBTQ. As we come full circle here, Zach, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for being here today and sharing yourself in the way you have, because this is a conversation I've been truly wanting to have more and more of on the podcast. As we come around to this closing here, one of the things I always ask is if you could give anyone a piece of advice as they start their journey or come through the doorways and are stepping into their journey as you've done in your own way, what would be something you'd love to leave the listeners with as we wrap everything up here today?
I'd say, you know, not to be corny or cliche, but, you know, be honest, be open with yourself, and also know that nothing is permanent. You know, things can change. Things probably will change, and that's completely fine. How you identify can change over the course of your lifetime, as long as any other things. Kind of do what's right for you in the moment and feel free to explore.
Awesome. I agree 100%. Be flexible, be open to that change. So if people want to see some more of what you're up to, read some of your articles, where is the best place for them to find you online, my friend?
I do post kind of some of my favorite articles on my website, which is just ZacharyJane.com. Also, Twitter is honestly probably the best way, realistically, because I post almost all my articles
Awesome. Up
there, and that's just ZacharyZane_, if you want to follow me there, and you can see some of my rambling.
It's ZacharyZane, and then the underscore is after it, or before it? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, the underscore is after it. Okay, ZacharyZane, and then underscore afterwards.
For those of you that are listening, we'll have all of these links on the show page here at the Coming Out Loud, so you can grab them there as well, and links right over to Zachary's stuff. So again, my friend, I'm so glad that we hooked up and made contact and were able to share you with the world in this way today.
Absolutely. My pleasure being on, being able to kind of tell my story. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you bet, buddy. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard today, you know the drill. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of those places. Give us a little bit of love and reviews, because that's what helps us get this word out, that there's a safe space in the Coming Out Lounge to come and talk about what you're doing. Also, if you want to hook up with me and get some more personalized help, there's some really cool new offerings that I've put out there for everyone to look at. Targeted one-on-one deep dive sessions that, I don't know, they go into things such as dating and mating on the other side of the closet doors. Maybe it's about stepping into your gay life and doing it your way. Even be maybe coming to terms with religion and sexuality and making them both play nicely in the sandbox of your life. So if you're interested in those, go to the comingoutcoach.com. You'll see some options for the one-on-one sessions. If you're looking at the show page here, right over there on the right-hand side of the show page, you'll see one-on-one sessions. They're offered. And like I said, they're deep dive, very focused sessions to just work on that one or two particular things in your life. And with that, we're going to wrap it up as we always do at Coming Out Rounds by saying never, ever stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and we will catch you in just another week. Take care, everyone. Hey, 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 closet dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners. I wanted to ask you a question. If you could take stress out of your journey, be more content in who you are, and find ways to do some of the most difficult things that you need to do as you come through the closet doors, would you do it? I bet the answer is yes. Why do I know this? Because I have been getting requests from listeners and clients or prospective clients about finding ways to just address certain things in their coming out journey. Some people don't want to work for a long time, and I totally get that. And that's why I've designed some brand new Coming Out Coaching one-on-one sessions. These are very focused, topic-specific sessions. For example, maybe you're looking at coming out midlife and how do you do it? Could be that you're already out, but you're not completely out and you want to talk about how do I do this and come out at work. Could be that you're having trouble even accepting yourself as a gay person. And might there be a possibility that you're really struggling with your sexuality and your religion? Depending on what you're looking for, I've designed 9 powerful, highly focused one-on-one laser coaching sessions that you can choose from. Each session goes for 90 minutes. We stay specifically focused on the topic at hand. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So now that you've heard about this, how would you like to go check them out? Well, here's how you do this. Go to thecomingoutcoach.com. On that page, you can scroll down. You'll see stuff for the book and for some other offerings, but then you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button, and it will take you to a page that describes each of the 9 offerings that I have. If you happen to be listening to the podcast right now, just look over to the right-hand side of the show page, and you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions right there. Again, just click on that button and go check out these new offerings. So, what do you think? Isn't it about time that you stepped out, you stepped up, and you stepped into resolving whatever the biggest issue is in your coming out journey? I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and I can't wait to work with you one-on-one.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.